This is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello to all of you out there listening here in the Midwest. And I was reminded Saturday just how many people around the immediate area of the Midwest do listen to our little radio station here. Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I am Michael Hogue, your host. I'm glad to have you here with us on this lovely Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you. Glad that the rain this weekend managed to miss some of the major events in town. The station's dance party went off without a hitch. They moved it inside rather than outside. Things went real well. Other events coming up. If you've been following, the station has more events that it sponsors all the time. There were several the weekend before. This weekend, more scheduled on into the future as KKFI continues to get more and more ingrained into the community all the time, which is exactly what we want to do, be in with the community in all kinds of levels, all kinds of different genres of music as we celebrate what we have in the arts community here in Kansas City. Several arts-oriented programs here on the radio station, including my show, The Arts Magazine, every Monday at noon. And I want to remind you, some of you say, I missed your show of last week, Michael. Anyway, I can get a recording of that. All you have to do is go to our website, kkfi.org, check out the list of podcasts for the page, pick out the program whose podcast you want to hear, drop it down, click on the show of the date of the show, and literally, the show never has to end. You can really listen at any time, which is the trend of radio in the future, I think. People won't be able to listen to a particular program at a particular time. They will probably listen to it at their convenience whenever they can. That's why more and more radio stations are putting up podcasts of their programs, and you can participate in that when you go to kkfi.org to hear the latest of your favorite programs here on KKFI. So far, only the community affairs and talk shows are listed, but soon we hope that we can be able to get the music as well here on the station. Glad to have you as a listener in any case, no matter how or in which way you listen. Glad to have you here as well. A couple of great interviews on the show today. A new show is opening tomorrow night, or actually Wednesday night. It's kind of a fusion between the Kansas City Repertory Theater and the Living Room Theater. Kansas City Rep and the Living Room have developed a wonderful relationship over the last couple of years. Glad that's bearing fruit with all kinds of different shows going on and different genres of shows as well. Then later on in the show, in the second half hour, we're going to talk about the Coterie Theater. Their Young Playwrights Festival is coming up. It'll be happening on Sunday, May the 14th at 7 o'clock p.m. Amanda Kibler, the Education Director, and Ryan Beard, a teen member of the Coterie's Young Playwrights Roundtable, will be here to talk about what goes on there and all the young playwrights and the shows they're doing. I remember years ago having a young lady on and talked to her about a play she did about Albert Einstein and all that went into doing that. Found it very interesting as well. But let's move over to the Rep and Living Room Theaters, an interview we had to record earlier this morning because they're hot in preparation for their opening on Wednesday evening over there. And here's my interview of just a couple of hours ago with Shanna Jones and Nathan Tyson talking about their show, Stillwater. First up on the program here this morning, we're going to talk about a fusion. In fact, they're referring to it as a rock and theater fusion revolving around a drug-filled trailer park in Stillwell, Oklahoma. Always a nice topic to start on, but fun too as well. It was originally developed through a workshop with KC Rep and the Living Room Theater. It's called Stillwater, and with us to tell us all about their participation in the show are two of the performers in the show, and some more than that. Nathan Tyson is with us. He is a performer in the show, also wrote the book and the lyrics for the show. He's a songwriter, award-winning lyricist for the Broadway bound production of Tuck Everlasting, and this production was developed in part at the Ron Beck Writers Project. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Hi there.
We're going to hear about how all of this came to be the way it is. Also with us for a return. In fact, this is getting to be pretty often. We have to start watching this now. Shannon Jones is with us, performer, singer, actress, based in New York City, but hasn't spent a whole lot of time in New York lately because she has been on the rep stages in first the Sandaland Diaries back in December. Here, Retrospection, and now this show, Stillwater. She is been active in New York and in regional theater with credits with regional theaters as well. And when she isn't doing theater type projects, she is touring with her band around New York and across the United States. That's exciting for you. Welcome back to our microphones.
Hello,
Stillwater. Now, this is an interesting story, I think, how it all came to be. Developed at a writer's retreat workshop, Tyson?
Yeah, well, it actually started before that. I've been in New York for about 15 years, writing primarily musical theater. But I grew up in Salina, Kansas. And for the last 10 years, I've been making music with some of my best friends who at one time or another all grew up in Salina. So anytime that we'd come back to Salina, we would start writing songs and rock and roll songs. And as a theater writer, I really enjoyed writing with these guys because it was like using the other part of my brain and writing in a different idiom. And a couple years ago, I said, hey guys, you know, we've written about 30 songs. Do you trust me enough to try to make something theatrical out of the songs that we have created? So that was the beginning. The band is called Joe's Pet Project. They finally said yes. And here we are doing this kind of rock show theater hybrid in the scene shop of the KC Rep. It's the first time with actors, but the band is on stage. And I think it's something unlike anyone has ever seen before. It's really exciting.
Now, you was able to get a hold of Shanna Jones and get her in the show. Did you have a previous knowledge of her work?
No, but my buddy Ryan, who is the keyboard player and musical director of the show and also in Joe's Pet Project, saw Shanna in Hair, and he texted me after he saw it and said, I don't know who we're casting in Stillwater, but we have to cast this girl.
Oh,
and then I saw a video of her performing, and yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the cool thing about the five actors that we have in the show is that they are all fantastic musicians themselves, and they all are in bands, and they all write music. So at any time, anyone can kind of pick up an instrument and play along, which is very cool.
Isn't that the new thing now, a fusion of theater and rock music? Happens more and more these days.
Yeah, you know, I love seeing music performed on stage, but I also, coming from a theater background, I want to see a little bit of story. I want it to add up to something. So I feel like that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, from Shanna's point of view now, how did this come upon to you? You were in town. You've been in town for some time. You must feel like you live here now.
Ah, I do. No, I actually had heard Eric Rosen talking about the project back when you guys did it at the Living Room, and he's been obsessed with the music, and he's actually like played some of the music for me before. So when they were asking for people to audition, I jumped at the chance because this is my idea of like the best time ever. You know, anytime. Like Nathan said, you can combine a really juicy story with rock music. It's just so exciting as an actor to be able to do both.
It kind of fits into both of your talents, you know, as a musician, singer, and actress.
Oh, yeah. And from day one, everyone in the room is so incredible. It's kind of like, anytime I can be the least talented person in the room, I really enjoy that because, working with these people has been so inspiring, and I've been forced to really grow and stretch, and I have to say this project has been one of my most favorites ever.
Now, a development between the two theaters, the Rep and the Living Room, uh-huh. Is that an interesting experience for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Was it done in theatrical readings first?
About a year ago, we put it up on its feet for the first time at the Living Room. And Rusty Snary and Shauna Jernigan are two really good friends of mine. I actually went to college with Rusty, and they are the artistic directors of the Living Room. And we talked about wanting to do a project with them. And he said, come on down. Let's try to do Stillwater. So we at that point a year ago, we performed it with the band and with additional singers, but there was no staging and there were no real technical elements to it. The Living Room gave us the space and the KC Rep gave us a budget, and it was there that Eric Rosen, who is the director of the project, saw it and said, "Oh, I think we could take this to the next level." And then we just needed a bigger space, so now we've moved to the KC Rep.
You basically did everything to begin with, and then you turn it over to Eric Rosen. You know, a great director, an artistic director, but still, it's your baby. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I trust him immensely. I've actually worked with him in New York on several projects that have all ended up falling apart. And so we just, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, God, when are we going to find a project to work together on? And you know, Eric is a playwright himself, and because I am... I'm writing the songs and also the book and lyrics, but also in the show, which is something I've never done before, and it's wearing a lot of hats, which is super exciting, and I knew I was getting into it, but it's also a little stressful to have him there to be my eyes, both dramaturgically and also just as kind of a keeper of the story, has been super helpful, and there's no way I could have been able to shape the show without him.
Sure, and that show opens quite soon now, Wednesday, May the 13th, at, as you said earlier, the Scene Shop of the Spencer Theater. So it has more of a...
Well, I think
it has more of a feel of being
you know, because it's a show that you don't... It's unlike anything you've ever seen. I think they want to try to put it in a space that felt like something that you've never been in before.
Oh, I've been there.
It's like, you know, it's it feels like half club, half junkyard, half music venue. And I always, when I wrote it, I was like, I want this to kind of be the show where, like, you want to have a beer in your hands as you're watching it. And the space definitely lends itself to
absolutely.
That. And there will be beer. We've been promised.
Yes.
What a great way to set it up. Now, the show is set in a trailer park in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It sounds rather intriguing. What kinds of things happen in this trailer park, Nathan?
Well, growing up in a very small town, Salina, Kansas,
it was just you and President Eisenhower.
Well, that was Abilene.
Abilene.
Yes, we definitely did field trips every year to visit his presidential library. No, I've always been really, and of course my family still lives in Salina. I'm so interested in the people that end up staying in small towns, the people that end up leaving small towns, and most importantly, the people that talk about leaving and never leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that happens a lot, being kind of the guy that went to New York, and I always end up sitting at a bar with someone and they're talking about how, oh man, I'm just going to get out of here, and then 5 years later, it's the same thing. So
yeah.
I wanted to write a story about those people that kind of have these dreams and what keeps them from doing it, whether it's the town themselves or it's their fear or whether they're actually better suited to be in this town. So it's about this. It's about kind of these unbridled 20-somethings that all have these big dreams and some end up surviving and getting the dreams and others, unfortunately, do not.
Now, where does Shanna's character fit into this story?
Well, she's one of the ones that got out and made quite a name for herself. Actually, it's sort of the cost of some of her friends in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up sort of having a big a fall from grace, I guess. And so in an attempt to get back on the horse and get back to where she was, she goes back to the small town. She sees it as sort of her last chance. And actually the discussions that happen between her and like Nathan said, the people that are wanting to get out or didn't get out, I think are some of the most exciting in the show, because it's it really brings up all of those issues and what is driving the different people of the town, you know, if
sure.
that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, of course it does. You break into song occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, there are 20 songs in the show, and when I first started writing it, I tried to do it without any sort of dialogue, and we just kind of went from song to song like a song cycle.
Well, that would be more of a...
Like a rock opera. Yeah, and then realized that I think the story was compelling enough that it was worth adding a little bit of dialogue. There's not a lot, but there is enough to keep the story going. But no, it's almost all music.
Yeah, tell us about some of the rest of the cast in the show. You have Shannon Jones, of course. Who else is in the show with you?
Well, one of the other performers in the band also plays a character. I talked about him previously. His name is Ryan McCall. He's a keyboard player, also performing. And then we have four other actors, two guys who have both been on Broadway, F. Michael Haney and Kurt Hansen. And then we have David George, who is from Kansas City and is a well-known and respected musician with a band called A Crooked Mile. And we love him, and he plays in the show. And then also Emily Shackelford, who was also recently just in Hair, and she is fantastic. So that's the 10 people in the show, the other four being the band members.
Were you specifically looking for people who also had bands or were in bands?
Absolutely, because it we just didn't, I don't know.
Does that kind of lend itself towards blending in to the storyline?
I think so. You know, I just didn't want these songs to be performed as musical theater songs. And I've had a bone to pick about composers that say they're writing rock and roll musicals for a very long time because the music never sounds authentic. So where I think our score is authentic rock and roll, I also wanted performers that feel comfortable in that way. Because, you know, everything is sung into microphones. It's not like, you know, headsets where they're staging. I mean, when you do a song, it has to be kind of presented like you're presenting it with a band behind you.
Sure. Go ahead, Shannon.
Oh, I guess I was thinking, too, we're still sort of in a workshop phase with this production. Mm-hmm. And just watching everyone work together, I mean, there are changes that we're making in the music daily and changes. And I feel like having a certain knowledge, a certain musicianship, as well as being an actor, kind of allows more flexibility and allows more of a collaborative process too. So, and it's just like amazing. F plays on two of his songs, or he plays the guitar, mm-hmm. and then David plays the guitar on his songs too. So there's a sort of collaborative energy that comes from the fact that we also know what to do with guitars and pianos, and
kind of blends into. I would think everything would kind of blend into everything else.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would think it would. We're speaking with Nathan Tyson and Shannon Jones. They are both in fact, Nathan not only is just a performer, but also wrote the book and the lyrics and is a musician. And Shannon is a performer, a singer, and musician as well. In the development production between the Kansas City Rep and the Living Room Theater, it's called Stillwell. It opens this...
Stillwater.
How many times have I made that mistake? Stillwater, which is a town in Oklahoma. It's actually where the Oklahoma State University is. The show opens up Wednesday, May the 13th at the Scene Shop of the Spencer Theater. And the Spencer Theater, of course, is at 4949 Cherry on the campus of UMKC. The Scene Shop is just a floor below. So are the people going to be directed from the main floor down to the bottom?
It's actually going to be a fun entrance, and maybe an entrance that people haven't usually used. At that space, you're going to come in through the loading dock.
Oh, still
you get to see where the magic happens.
A trailer park type feel.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Still, one of the reasons for this might be that the Spencer is being redone this summer.
Yes.
Yes. Very if you exciting. Like the way it used to be, take pictures because it's not going to look that way come November when the Christmas Carol opens.
That's right.
And it's going to be happening this summer, so you're actually doing probably the last production in the Spencer Theater before it all wraps up.
Yeah. It's the final show of the season.
Yeah, that's right. And if you come to the late show, that comes with free beer.
Yes.
Free beer.
Friday night's 10 o'clock.
A little incentive to see the show there. Yeah. Have you always dreamed of doing a fusion like this, Nathan?
Yes. I have always wanted to write a rock opera. And I finally got the opportunity.
Why Stillwater? You've never lived in Stillwater.
I didn't. It actually started because when I was looking for a way to combine the songs that I wrote with Joe's Pet Project, I was looking for some sort of structure, something to adapt, and I actually stumbled upon Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma. Oh. And although the story is not Oklahoma at all, what I got excited about were the two love triangles. And I thought, oh, I wonder if I could do a contemporary retelling and put these two love triangles all in modern times. And that was the jumping off point, and now that is what this show has become.
Interesting premise. Kind of a young people show. Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a lot of these songs when I was going through my own quarter-life crisis. And
quarter-life crisis.
To say I'm out of that now.
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
But, yeah, I mean, the characters are all between their mid-20s to mid-30s.
Yeah, okay. Kind of a show for the time. These are the people you want to appeal to. Do you think this is the wave of the future, theater and rock fusions?
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
That would fit down both your alleys.
We are trying to get younger audiences to come see this stuff. I'm not saying that older audiences are not going to like this because the songs are great. But whatever we can do to try to convince these younger audiences that are not into theater and think that it's an old man's game to get them in the door is what we're trying to do.
That's the challenge that theaters have for the future.
Well, yes, and I think theater needs not to be a stagnant form, and I think what's really exciting is breaking convention, and this really does. Like Nathan said, we're walking around holding microphones like you would at a rock concert, but then we're also having scenes with these microphones in our hands, and the way we break in and out of form, I feel like, is very new and exciting, and I think I hope theater does more and more of that, where it's less, we're on a stage on one end of the room and you're in seats on the other end of the room and we just sit there. You know, I think it needs to happen that we're changing the form and experimenting.
Yeah. It's an incredibly immersive experience coming to see Stillwater. Yeah. The other really cool thing that we do in the piece is a lot of the story is told via text messages.
Yeah.
And so modern, there's a big projection element. So as people are communicating, you see the projections of the text that they're sending to one another projected onto this large screen.
Well, you're making use of all kinds of the modern things.
Yes, absolutely.
Very interesting. The show, of course, opens Wednesday the 13th. Basically, what is the run? Like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 2 weeks?
And Monday. Off is Tuesday.
Oh.
And then, once again, we go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Evening shows, and there's a Sunday matinees.
Yep.
If you go to kcrep.org, all of the information is there.
kcrep.org, and the number to call, the central ticket office, which used to run right into the Spencer Theater. I don't know what they're doing now, but it used to be right in the lobby of the Spencer Theater. But that number is 816-235-2700. Ask about the times and the dates, which you can get on the Rep's website at kcrep.org. We're speaking with Nathan Tyson, the performer, wrote the book and lyrics. He has a lot invested in this, so we'll see how it goes for him. And Shanna Jones, performer, singer, actress based in New York, but she's been spending a lot of time here. In fact, have you had a chance to go back to New York for any extended period of time during this run you've had here?
No, I've just been hanging out here, enjoying myself.
Well, you started out in December, probably rehearsals before that, and that kind of blended into the Hair retrospective show, and now this.
Yeah.
Are you ever going back?
I don't know. Kansas City, you're winning me over, man. I really love it here.
I suppose when the work is here, that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you have anything scheduled coming up? You going to tour with your band?
I'm actually going to... I'm doing a thing at Musical Theater Heritage. They have musical Mondays and Tuesdays. Uh-huh. And that's June 23rd and 22nd. We're going to do the music from Company. Yeah, so that's the next thing. And then probably New York in the summer.
Yeah. What about Nathan? This is a big thing for you.
This is. I am doing an adaptation of a French film called Amelie. It won some Oscars or is Oscar nominated several years ago, but we're having its pre-Broadway tryout at Berkeley Rep this summer.
How exciting for you to get to do these tryouts in different parts of the country.
It's the absolute best. You have to like find the right time to bring it to New York. And to have an opportunity to play with the piece in a safe environment is the best.
Did you two know each other in New York by any chance?
No.
Just guessing.
Yeah.
Because it's a big town. You know, can't get away from that. But the show is called Stillwater, originally developed through a workshop between Kansas City Repertory Theater and the Living Room Theater, and they've had some very good collaborations in the past. I hope for all your sakes that it works as well with this one as well. It is a rock and theater fusion revolving around a drug-fueled trailer park in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Opens this Wednesday the 13th. Once again, the number to call, 816-235-2700. And information can be found on the web at kcrep.org. I want to thank my guests for enlightening about what is happening over there. Nathan Tyson, a performer in the show, wrote the book, wrote the lyrics, has a lot invested in this. A big part of his life has been, at least lately probably, has been putting this. Since you're the writer, as you see the rehearsals going on, you make little changes?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
A lot. It's all about right now.
And actually, I have to say, that's one of the very cool things about what's happening right now is that as we perform the piece, we still get rehearsal during the day. Mm-hmm. So once we have a paying audience, we can make notes, we can see what people like, what people don't like, and put in changes. So if you see the show when we open on the 13th, if you come back the following week, you're going to see a different show.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
And Shanna Jones, of course. How many numbers do you sing? I never did ask.
I'm not sure. How many? Like
a goodly
six?
Number?
Six, seven.
Yeah.
Does she lobby?
She's the lead.
Does she lobby for more songs?
No, but we just keep giving her songs because she's so good.
Oh, thanks.
Nice talking to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Nathan Tyson, Shanna Jones.
Thank you.
The show is Stillwater, opening this Wednesday evening at the Spencer Theater Scene Shop. That's the floor below the main theater on the campus of UMKC. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara are much too good to be trapped in the lame-brained chase comedy Hot Pursuit, but trapped they are. Witherspoon plays a by-the-book Texas policewoman who tries to protect Vergara, the wife of a Colombian drug informant, from hitmen and corrupt cops. The plot's contrived mechanics are all too obvious, thwarting any goodwill generated by the likable stars. There isn't anything in this obvious farce that we haven't seen before and done better. Although the Oscar-winning Witherspoon is obviously slumming here, she has no one to blame but herself. She's also the film's executive producer. Hot Pursuit? Well, I'd suggest you pursue your entertainment elsewhere. When the characters are as annoying as the ones in the new comedy The D-Train, even talented actors like Jack Black and James Marsden can't save it. Black plays the irritating chairman of his small town's 20th high school reunion committee. He thinks he can score by getting the most popular guy from his class, now an insufferable TV commercial actor, to attend. Black spins a web of deceit to achieve his goal, and it comes back to haunt him. Black and Marsden are terrific, but you won't want to spend any time with either of them. Plus, the plotting is obvious and the movie is spotted with events and dialogue that just don't ring true. The D-Train is one ride you'll definitely want to miss. Also opening this week, Dior and I is a documentary about the fashion house's new director and his latest collection. White God is a Hungarian drama about a girl who tries to save dogs deemed unfit by the state. Lambert and Stamp is a documentary about the young filmmakers who wound up managing a certain rock band in the 1960s by the name of The Who. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Freeze Frame!
This week, religious outsiders.
They may need more time to partake in sacraments. They may need different concessions to participate as fully as possible. Mm.
We talk to people of faith who often don't feel welcome in their houses of worship. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
This Wednesday's All Souls Forum talks about suicide. Dr. Stanley Edlovich from UMKC has established links between negative thought patterns like hopelessness and a sense of failure and clinical symptoms as indicators of acute suicide risk. We tackle a big subject on this Wednesday's All Souls Forum at 6 p.m., suicide with Dr. Stanley Edlovich.
This is Harry S. Truman inviting you to join me for the From Art to Microchip Show. Dwight Frizzell, one of my neighbors out here in Independence, Missouri, made something he calls Harry's Shadow, and I'm in it. Although I don't have a dime's worth of interest in it, I hope the show is a grand success, and all of you listen in.
Wednesday night at 11:30.
Dr. Margie Kerr is a small-town gal who grew up to become known as the sociologist who studies fear. Tune in to the chilling adventures of Dr. Margie Kerr on Sprouts Thursday at noon.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Interesting things going on this week. Lots of events going on throughout the area. One of them, in fact, is going on over at the Codery Theater, where they are having their annual Young Playwrights Festival. Plays written by young people, and along with this, they have, as I recall, workshops and things of that nature, at least discussions and roundtable discussions of things. The actual festival that you can see as a member of the public is this Sunday, May 17th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Codery Theater, correct? And I say correct because I'm looking across the table at my guest, Amanda Kibler. Am I saying that right, Amanda?
Yeah, that's it.
Is with us. She is the education director of the Codery. And our friend David Golston is with us as well. He is the director of marketing and public relations for the Codery Theater. See if I can. I didn't write it down, so I'll have to do this by heart now. Named by Time Magazine as one of the top five children's theaters in the United States.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I did it. Thanks so much, both of you, to be here.
Oh, thank
I remember
you.
Past years interviewing some of the young people from the Codery Theater, and I always remember this one interview I did with a young lady who wrote a play about Albert Einstein. So I figured, you know, it would be a children's play about Albert Einstein, but it was chock full of stories, dates, historical events, and things that Albert Einstein did. Probably she researched that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sure, she probably did.
But I assume the Playwrights Festival includes a number of plays written by young people of a similar nature, probably.
Yeah. I'm always astounded with the young playwrights at the amount of research and work that goes into the plays that they write and the artistry that comes out of it, that it's not, you know, it's not going to be like something they just kind of throw together. It's usually something that they've been working on for a while. And we still, throughout the rehearsal process leading up to the festival, the directors, and I'm one of the directors this year, the three directors, we work directly with the playwright to help them continue to work on and continue to hone their play so that they are presenting the best script possible. And this year we do have actually a wide variety of what is being presented. Everything from, like, we have a musical this year.
Wow.
Yeah, which is the first year that we've had a musical. A work based on body image for girls and, like, a really moving monologue about, darkness personified and, like, the good and bad sides of darkness. A totally goofy play about going to rehab for watching bootleg movies. Yeah, like, runs the gamut.
Well, we all were young people once.
Yes.
In my case, not anymore, not right. For some time. But I'm sure if some were listening or people are listening in their behalf, how did these young people that are involved in the show this year, how did they first get involved with being part of the Playwrights Festival?
Yeah, we have workshop that goes out to, like, schools can book workshops, and we usually do one. The past few years we've been able to do one of these workshops at the Fringe Festival also. It's called Reaching the Right Minds. It's something that
Jeff Church, our artistic director, he began, I believe he began the idea of it when he was working in Washington, D.C., and started it here in Kansas City in 1992. And so we have four teachers that go out, and they'll do workshops at with these different schools, and it's like a five-hour intensive workshop. And from there, the teacher, the teaching artist who works with the Coterie, can nominate one of these, one of the students from the Reaching the Right Minds workshop to interview with Jeff to get to be into the Young Playwrights Roundtable. So it's kind of how they get started in Roundtable. And once they enter into Roundtable with us, then they get to, they meet throughout the school year, writing, working on stuff, and they get to have their plays that they're working on read out loud by their the fellow students in Roundtable with them. And they get give feedback. They get feedback from their peers as well as from Jeff, but most of it is actually from their peers. It's a true roundtable where everyone's voice is listened to. And then by the end of the year, everyone who wants to can turn something in to be considered for the festival. And then Jeff has the the arduous task of narrowing it down to fit into just a couple of hours for the festival.
Right. He takes on arduous tasks.
Yes.
Directing a show at the Unicorn, and yep. Unless it's wrapped up by now. But I remember doing the interview. We couldn't say the name of the title.
Yes.
Because of what it is. And after we had fun on the air doing everything but saying the title.
Right.
Poking all around but not
exactly.
Having fun. I noticed that their advertising the next week was, the show's so intriguing, you can't say its name.
Yes.
So he's used to taking on big projects.
Exactly.
And I'm sure this was a big, interesting project for him to take on every year. He's been doing it for how long now?
I think it's been going on since 92, since 1992.
Yeah. So the interview I did was
going on for a while.
In the mid-90s,
yeah.
At least, I think. And it was very intriguing, the different subject matter. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult for him to narrow it down to the number that he's presenting?
Well, he'll come to me usually with like a narrowed down and like, okay, I'm debating between these three for one slot, and I'll kind of, and what we really look at, what by the time it gets to me, what I'm really looking at with him is making sure that it's not skewing too heavily in one direction, but instead we are accurately representing like comedies and dramas, and you know, we don't want to have like five pieces covering the same thing.
Of course not.
You know, so yeah, looking at like, and also making sure that we are representing a variety of voices as opposed to just having one person's play dominating.
Sure.
But just getting to hear everyone.
Yeah, finding the right mix is
exactly.
Often difficult, isn't it? Now, the public can see the final performances
yes.
of these shows. It's on
absolutely.
Sunday. This Sunday, the 17th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Coterie Theater. And for more information, you can go on thecoterie.org or you can call their box office number 816-474-6552. That's the number to call. I would say ask for Kevin, but he'd be mad at me. But anyone at the Coterie he box office can take care of him. I know Kevin, so I give him a little bit of trouble to see the shows coming up this week. And what kind of shows will there be? You mentioned lightly. Do you want to mention mm-hmm. any names or anything?
Well, we actually have a really interesting partnership this year that we've never done before. And it's with UMKC Conservatory and the Lyric Opera. So
wow.
Our roundtable members wrote some pieces and then they submitted them. And then some of the UMKC Conservatory members, they took the words that our students wrote and created them into an opera, into a short opera piece, a 10-minute opera piece, and then brought them to the Lyric Opera where
Some of the singers get to work on them? With,
yes.
Like Joyce, not that it was Joyce Donato, but for instance, someone like that from the Lyric got to work on it?
They were workshopped.
Yes, they were workshopped, and then
the premiere is going to be this Sunday at our performance,
uh-huh.
and then they are performing them again actually in July during the Fringe Festival.
Oh, that'll be
yeah.
interesting.
So we're having several public performances of the pieces that were created.
So they actually had a chance to work with some of the singers from the opera.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the Young Company. The new company or whatever.
Yeah.
The apprentices. Yeah,
yeah.
They
what
got to work with them.
What a great experience for them to do. Working
yeah.
with actual professionals and would-be professionals.
Yes, and
absolutely.
I think it's a great also for them to see that their words and their writing can take on a new life outside of the traditional theater that we create at the Coterie, but instead, like, oh, you can create something completely different. You can create an opera using your words if you find the right partners.
Yes, you just never know how things are going to turn out.
Exactly.
How someone's going to see your show and think, you know, different medium, of course, but
yes,
that might make an interesting film one day.
Yes.
But it's possible.
Yes.
In the arts, all kinds of things are possible, and getting exposed to that, I don't know, might blow their mind in some aspect.
Well, certainly open some doors and some imaginations as to what might be possible for them in the future as well, because okay. I think none of this was a new collaboration for us, so I don't think any of the students went into this thinking, I'm going to write a piece that's going to be set to music. It kind of all happened after the pieces. I don't know if they were written or not, but I don't think this will be a new experience for the students to have written something that is set to music. So
I think I wonder if Shakespeare ever conceived that any of his work could be turned into an opera or anything else, and they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're put to music. And all of that. Have any of the students' projects been seen on the regular Coterie stage after some time?
I don't believe so, but we generally tend to do full-length pieces, and these are mostly just scenes. So it's a little different genre than what we would normally put on the stage. The goal is to really encourage the writers and get them started on the road to finding their own voice and their, you know, the genre that they like or whatever, however they're most comfortable as an artist, as a writer, and encouraging them to move along the way, you know, as they get a little bit older.
Are they encouraged to write about, you know, themes of the day in one faction or another?
Usually they just naturally, young people tend to write about, all of us tend to write about and be connected to something that is within our lives. And so a lot of what they write tends to be very contemporary and very of the experiences they have. We do have one written by Ryan Beard, one of our students, called Prodigal. It's the musical. Uh-huh. And it's based off of the prodigal son,
sure.
The story of the prodigal son. And so that's one, but it's set very contemporary.
Oh, sure.
Like it's, you know, two brothers set today as opposed to set in a biblical time.
You know, right. Whether we like it or not, that situation replicates itself quite often in
over and over.
Yeah. It's not just a biblical story.
Yeah.
It actually comes to life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The takes on it are probably different.
Yes.
But still, jealousies remain.
Mm-hmm.
What ifs remain?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure young people have a lot of what ifs. They have a lot of decisions to make about their lives.
Oh yeah.
What are we going to do? And if this doesn't work out for me, where do I go from here? We never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you'd be pleasantly surprised at how complex some of the writing is, considering their, you know, teenagers that are putting their whatever thoughts, feelings on, you know, into words, you know, on paper. They're not juvenile thoughts. You know, they're complicated, complex, and intricate ways of putting stories together that they come up with. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fascinating and very usually very surprising.
So they're more of a positive nature, I would hope, anyway.
Usually.
Not always.
I know. I've seen some things that, you know, one's outlook on life, you know, is, you know, formed very early. And those who have more of a doomsday type scenario kind of wonder how they're going to work through that. But still, it's interesting to see the work.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, as they're writing and as they're rewriting while we're in rehearsals and stuff, I know I was involved in one a couple of years ago that the ending seemed very doom and gloom, and by the time that playwright was done with his rewrites, it had a hopeful ending. It wasn't like happily ever after everyone skipped off into the sunset, but it had like a hopeful nature, which it was missing at the beginning. And I think that kind of shows the evolution of us as people, that we might at first see something as being like, oh, this is terrible, nothing will ever work out, and then be like, well, actually, maybe someday it will.
What is that collaborative process like with them? Are they at first they're probably just overwhelmed by the situation, yeah. But I would think they might reach a point where they're saying, now she is changing my work too much.
Yeah.
Do they ever have that?
I haven't had that problem yet.
but it's losing its whole original meaning. Please, Amanda.
I actually love the collaborative process with our teen writers. I love working with young people. That's why I'm the education director. Like, that's why I do education. But one of the things I love is this is, for a lot of them, the first time that they've had to collaborate on their writing in a way that they never have before, because I always approach it and tell them, like, I'm looking at this from a director's point of view, which means I'm looking at it from the audience's point of view. And these are some things that I think are missing, what an audience might miss. These are some things that I think will help connect your thoughts a little better. And I make a point personally to ask them, like, is this all right? I think this is what I think is missing. Do you see what I'm saying? Is it all right if we do something like that? So that it's still them. And I never give them the words to use. It's always like, hey, this is what I think is missing. I would really like you to kind of look at this.
Less like a book editor who might actually sit down and say, change this to that. Uh-huh. This is more like a process of saying, okay, here's what feels like maybe missing. Now find a way to put that in, or, you know what I mean? Kind of suggestive, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's less editing than it is more sort of guiding the process of them writing their own piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that, and the young people, with every year that passes, they get younger. I've discovered that.
Amazing how that works.
The students I see tend to be a little bit younger every year.
Right.
It's amazing how that works. Pretty soon they're going to be down to infants. But they've grown up in a time when they were always around a computer.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a time in their life when there weren't computers probably in the home or yeah. place where they had access to it. And, mm-hmm. and probably the same way with cell phones and all of that. You know, the idea of having to be home to be called to get a message was pretty much unheard of. The fact that their lives are so much different in that respect, does that reflect in the writing? The immediacy of gratification, yeah. I believe psychologists call it.
Yes.
The need for immediate gratification.
Yeah. Yes. I have seen a lot, like, just in the time that I've been teaching and have been working with young people, I've seen, like, huge shifts in the way that they view the world and that immediacy of gratification. And one of the biggest things, and this is something that Jeff and I have really taken the education program to be now, is that students want to be makers and doers. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be passively watching things anymore. They want to be active participants. If you think of YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, their voices are heard and their voices are justified all the time because they're able to make a video and put it up on YouTube and have anyone in the world watch it if they want to.
Oh, yeah.
And they can also see other people their own age doing the same thing. So mm-hmm. even if you're not doing it yet, they can become inspired by someone else to do so themselves. It's creating a whole generation of creators.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, sure. Which is the cool. Independent Filmmakers Coalition people, well, in the old days, it was they made their own short films.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that has graduated to making their own videos.
Yes.
And now, of course, something they could never do before, very few people would see your film or your video. But as you mentioned, YouTube,
yeah.
Almost anyone could put their finished project up on you. It has to fit certain standards.
Yes.
Sure. But you can put that up on YouTube and it can be seen, possibly, by anyone in the entire world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that Absolutely. Kind of changes things for them. I can see where they'd think, well, no one's ever going to see this. Yes. The realistic possibility of anyone seeing mm-hmm. it is really there.
Yeah. And so it's really starting to transfer now into this very, like, into this medium of theater that they want to be the ones on stage. They want to be the ones creating. They want to be making it. They want to have a hand in the entire thing. And because of that, we've actually shifted the past couple of years who is acting in the Young Playwrights Festival. It used to be we would bring in professional actors, and now it's shifted into the roundtable members, and we will bring in sometimes some of our masterclass actors, but mostly it's the members of the Roundtable, because they have had a hand in helping create and shape all of these plays, and so why not let them give a chance to present them as well?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they get a hand in the casting process.
They get to nominate themselves to be to be cast if they want to.
Yeah, some people write things with their self in mind.
Yeah,
but others don't.
Yeah,
well, often will write with a particular person they know in mind.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, we do take when Jeff and I sit down and actually do the casting. Because most of those plays have been read in Roundtable, Jeff will sometimes be like, oh, this playwright always chooses this person to read this role. And I think that's a really good intuition. We need to listen to that. And so we do listen to what they don't always know it, but we do listen to what they say. We try and really take their opinion into account as well.
So they actually have their own casting in mind, in its fashion.
Yes.
So to speak. I find that very interesting. They probably do have their favorites. Just like playwrights will say, well, I wrote this show for Jack Lemmon. And,
yeah.
With Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau in mind, I wrote this show. And,
yes.
And there's the Odd Couple on Broadway.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But they probably do that.
We have our own microcosm of that.
That's right. Now. That's very true. The performance that the public can see is on this Sunday, May 17th at 7 p.m. at the Coterie Theater, and they can get tickets, David, through the usual methods.
Uh-huh.
Here?
The website, which is thecoterie.org, or they can call 816-474-6552 and talk to Kevin in our box office.
You
can talk to anybody.
That's right. The Coterie Theater is located in Crown Center, if you've never been there before. 2450 Grand Avenue is the address for Crown Center. Coterie is on the lowest level, Suite 144.
That's right.
And you recently did Susical? Over there?
Well, we're actually playing Dr. Seuss's Cat in a Hat right now.
Yeah, Hat right now.
Slightly different Dr. Seuss.
Well, sure.
Dr. Seuss, nonetheless.
But still very popular with the young people. I would expect
Absolutely.
You had probably sell-out crowds most
we
of the
We have had
time.
Many, many sold-out crowds. We closed this Sunday, and as a matter of fact, we have a couple of sold-out performances between now and then, but there are still tickets available for that as well.
Sure. So, do you want to talk about the upcoming season now?
Sure, absolutely. We'd love to do that. So this summer, we're closing out this current season with the Broadway musical, A Year with Frog and Toad. And that's going to be a fun family musical that's going to run from June 16th to August 2nd. And then in September, we launch our 2015-2016 season with The Miracle Worker. So a classic that Jeff's going to put on stage and sort of reinvent for modern times. And then after that, our holiday musical is going to be A Charlie Brown Christmas, which is one of the first times it will be put on stage. It just recently came available, and the Coterie is going to be one of the first in the country to do that show. And then we are doing...
And Justice for Some.
That's right.
Which is the trial of Anthony Burns. It was a precursor to the Civil War, the fugitive slave trial. I think that's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a young people's theater, but all of those shows are not young people's type shows.
Well, it's true. We run the wide range of ages for the shows that we present, some for the older and some for the middle and some for the younger. So we've got a little bit of everything for
question, and maybe you don't know, but in your Miracle Worker production, are you casting an adult, for instance, in the role of the teacher?
I believe he's going to cast adults in the adult roles and younger people in the younger people's roles, although I don't think the cast has been quite announced yet. So I'm
just curious, because it's often adults, some, but children are also included.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It is going to be a multi-ethnic cast, so it will be cast a little bit differently probably than it has been before.
Oh, it was set in Mississippi, as I recall, so... Naturally, Africans Americans
sure.
have been there.
Absolutely. So it's going to be a very interesting show, I think. We're going to have shadow interpretation actually on stage with the actors, following the actors, signing what's being said. And it's going to be a really interesting, fun way to kick off the season.
Oh, sure. Though this won't happen in the Coterie's production, but I was involved in a production of that in my high school years. And the food fight scene. was the most fun for all of us.
Of course.
Oh, forks and plates. Oh, one fork went up in the audience. The teacher, the principal was horrified. No one was hurt. It's very interesting, and the two ladies get quite into the role.
Absolutely. That scene has to be choreographed like a dance scene, you know, because it has to be the same every time, and no one should get hurt, but it should look very realistic every time.
It should look realistic as well. Great things happening over there. I can understand why Time magazine gave him such a prestigious outlook for things. The Young Playwrights Festival culminates with performances this Sunday, the May 17th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Coterie. It's the performance part of the Young Playwrights Festival. I guess they've been doing classes, meetings, and working on plays for probably some time now, this yep. week at least.
Yeah, we've been working, the past 2 weeks with the playwrights and with the actors. We directors have been working with them.
And then the playwrights have been working on the pieces since last fall.
They've been going for the whole Are they nervous year. About the public seeing their show?
None of them seem nervous. They all just seem excited.
It probably won't be too hard.
Talk to us again 10 minutes before. Yeah. And we may have a different story.
That's when all the nerves set in.
Sound great. The number to call for more information, because the public can attend this, is 816-474-6552 or online at thecoterie.org. The Young Playwrights Festival culminates this weekend, performances that you can see, but all part of the regular Coterie season, which goes on year-round.
Year-round.
At the Coterie Theater in Crown Center. I want to thank my guests for being with us, Amanda Kibler. I don't think I've had you on before.
You have not.
Education Director for the Coterie Theater, and David Goldston, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the Coterie. Thanks for keeping us up to date.
Absolutely.
As it were, on things going on.
Thanks for having us back.
Yes, thank you.
Nice to have you all with us. Dr. Mike is filling in for the Insider this afternoon. You're probably thinking, what does that mean for me, the listener? Well, it doesn't mean anything. Great music, great jazz continues. Dr. Mike's a little more laid back than the Insider, and you'll see that through what he's playing, but great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you.